Let's stand, if you would, and I'm going to read from Luke 15, just the first 7 verses there. And it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him," him being Jesus. That's amazing, right? That the tax collectors and the sinners, the bad people, were flocking to Jesus. Let's just say that before we go any further. "And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.' So he," Jesus, "told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. Because this is a parable, and by the nature of parables being short, compact stories that end up kind of like the ocean, you start wading into the ocean, and it starts getting deeper and deeper, and eventually you're at a place where you're underwater, and the waves are coming over you. Because that's the nature of a parable, they usually require a little bit of unpacking, and kind of a little bit of weeding through the details, which in some ways are very simple, but in which other ways actually get to be more complex and more kind of interwoven with some deep, deep truths. And because that's how parables work, we're going to spend a little bit of time this morning talking about what Jesus is saying. Because look, I mean, on the surface, it seems to be about a shepherd who loses a sheep and he goes and finds a sheep and brings him home. And it's simple. And that is true. But friends, there is something at work in this story that is so deep and profound that I think in the looking at the details, that Jesus will really meet us and speak this deep and powerful truth to us. About 3 years ago, I was on a mission trip with some TU students to Chicago over spring break, and we were working with an inner city ministry there called Sunshine Gospel Ministries. And it worked in the south side of Chicago, which, if you know Chicago at all, is a tough part of town. There's a lot of great redemptive work being done there through the church and through various ministries, but it's a tough part of town for sure. And in the evenings, we would come back together after being sent out during the day, and we'd come back together, and the staff at Sunshine Gospel would educate us about ministry in the inner city with its complexities and its diversity and how you have to be sensitive to different things that are at work in those communities. And it was fascinating, really. It was really humbling because I just sat there as one who knew nothing. And as part of those meetings, we would have a time of worship and singing, and there was one song which was pretty new at that time. To us, it's a few years old, but it's the David Crowder song or John Mark McMillan song. I don't know who wrote it. Those things get franchised and everybody sings them. But it was the song, "How He Loves Us." And if you know this song at all, it starts out in kind of a verse and it goes to the chorus. And there's one part in there where there's that line that says, "And heaven meets earth like an unforeseen kiss." Or if you are a rebellious worshiper, "Heaven meets earth like a sloppy wet kiss," and that's what all the young kids were singing. And so I was standing back there with the other campus ministers, and I nudged one of them, which just kind of, you know, gave him an eye roll, like, that's stupid. That's a terrible line. And, you know, we moved on in our smugness and self-righteousness. And a few days later, we were driving back to Tulsa, and the chorus to that song was stuck in my head in such a way that I couldn't get it out. And so I thought, well, I might as well download it. So I went onto iTunes, bought the song, and put in my earphones, and I listened to it, in the proper use of the word, literally for 2 hours, just on repeat again and again. And there was something so simple about that chorus, "Oh, how he loves us, oh, how he loves us so." It was transfixing to me. Because that was a truth. That is something that, having grown up in the church, that I had heard numerous times. I had learned Bible verses. I had been to vacation Bible school. I knew that. But there was something that was happening that day that was new for me. And in this passage, Jesus comes with this simple message that God is the shepherd who loves his sheep. And yet that simple message has the power to literally change us and change everything about the way that we live. So the two things that we're going to see this morning about the parable, and then we're going to try and develop them, are this: that the shepherd has a job. Secondly, that the shepherd has joy in his job. And then we're going to see how Jesus, the good shepherd, applies this to our hearts. So let's first look at the shepherd and his job. So here's the setting. Jesus, it says that he turns around and he begins to tell this parable to them. Now, them is definitely the Pharisees and the scribes who are sitting with him. Certainly the sinners and the tax collectors are there with them too. But the thrust of this is that Jesus is telling this parable to the Pharisees and the scribes. Now, you may know who those people are. If not, let me tell you real briefly. The Pharisees and the scribes are the religious elite of that day. They were Old Testament scholars. They knew the Bible like the back of their hands. They were proficient in the ways of Jewish culture and religion. And they weren't always terrible people. These are people that most of us would look at and say, man, that guy's pretty nice. They seem to be doing the right things. And Jesus comes down on them for lots of reasons, but they were not bad people. They were good people. And so Jesus starts at them, and he starts talking about a shepherd. Now, this idea of a shepherd was complex for the Pharisees, because in the Old Testament, in their book of proficiency, the law, shepherds were, they were esteemed. Moses, their great mediator, refers to himself as a shepherd. He was the shepherd of Israel. He guided them and he led them through their wandering in the wilderness, in the desert, to the promised land, right to the brink of the promised land. So Moses was seen and known as the shepherd of Israel. And then in Ezekiel, the writer there talks about shepherds as being dignified, nobility even, like kings. And then, of course, God himself in Psalm 23 is called the shepherd, right, who leads us beside still waters and restores our soul. And so on one hand, there's this elevated and dignified image of a shepherd to the ears of the Pharisees. But on the other hand, shepherds in that day were a low caste people. They were common folk who would go out into the countrysides and care for the sheep. And in caring for the sheep, they would be dirty and filthy, and at times even ritually, ceremonially unclean through the nature of their work. And for Pharisees and scribes who were at the opposite end of that caste system, they were high caste, they were high class, which I think is a pretty good idea. I think maybe we ought to move back that way, but they didn't ask me. They were up here, the shepherds were down here. And so when Jesus starts telling them this parable about a shepherd, they've got this tension, because on one hand, they're dignified, nobility, but on another very real sense, they are down here, and they're dirty and unclean. And so when Jesus starts, he doesn't just talk about a shepherd. He says this: what man of you, when you are tending the sheep, having 100 sheep, which one of you? And so Jesus makes them a shepherd. He takes that tension and just inserts them right into the middle of it and says, you are the shepherd, O Pharisee. So he sets this up for them. And he says, which one of you having 100 sheep? It's this indirect, powerful attack on their classism, right? They wanted to be up here. The shepherds were down here. And Jesus says, look, that's not going to work in my eyes. That's not how I see people. And if you're ever going to see people rightly, you have to begin to let that house crumble down. So he's forcing them to see, and by relationship, he's forcing us to see that status and position and goodness and righteousness, self-righteousness, matters nothing in Jesus' sight. And if that's you this morning, I kind of want to say, sorry, not sorry. Because in one sense, you need to hear that, that your goodness and your church attendance or your righteousness or your whatever, Jesus looks at and says, who are you kidding? And for others of you, you need to hear that as good news because you're at the opposite end of that. You have felt your unrighteousness. You have known your disobedience. You have known your lack of Bible reading or whatever that is for you. And you need to hear Jesus say, yeah, that doesn't matter to me. And so he brings the Pharisees into this story. But he goes even further because what, after all, is the shepherd's job? A shepherd has one pretty clear job: to watch the sheep. To care for the sheep. That's his job. He takes them out to eat. He brings them back into town, into wherever they would stay. He gets up the next day, he takes them out. That's his job. Jesus says, which one of you having 100 sheep, when you lose a sheep? Our translations sometimes look like that's in the passive, like the sheep just ran away and it wasn't the shepherd's fault. In the original language, Jesus is very clear and intentional. He says, which one of you having lost a sheep? He's like, okay, so you're a shepherd, but not only that, you're a bad shepherd. You're terrible at your job, which includes one responsibility. So the Pharisees, right, are all hot and bothered at this. They're thinking, I hate this guy more than I already did. And Jesus is drawing them in and teeing them up. Which one of you, having lost that one sheep, wouldn't leave the 99 and go get them? And the obvious kind of implication for that is, I would, of course you would. If you lose a sheep, you go and get it. Now, it's a sheep and it's dirty, but sheep were valuable, and that was currency. So they would obviously go after the one that was lost, because it's easier to find 99 together than the one that's lost. So there it is, the job of a shepherd, and they have failed at their job. So the question becomes, how will the shepherd respond to this somewhat seemingly obvious rhetorical question that Jesus asks them? And which one of you won't leave the 99 for the one? And because it's such an easy answer to that, what Jesus says next is so shocking. What we begin to think is that the shepherd goes out and starts calling for the sheep like we go call for our lost dog. Right? We get in the car, we drive to the corner, we may stand out and say, here, puppy, puppy, puppy. And you listen and wait for the dog, you know, chains and to come around the corner. You go down a little further and you call out for your dog's name, and it comes running out of somebody's backyard and grabs you, and you grab it, and there's kissing and grossness and all that. You throw it in the car, and we think that's what happens, except it's not. A biblical scholar named Kenneth Bailey, who spent his whole life in the Middle East and has rubbed shoulders and been around shepherds, says that when a sheep goes away from the flock, they do two things. They sit down and they stay silent. They go find somewhere and like, well, I'm lost. And every biblical scholar, anybody will tell you sheep are stupid, which is humbling when the Bible calls us sheep, but that's okay. We go sit down, the sheep goes and sits down, stays silent and does nothing. So here's what Jesus says to them. Verse 5. The shepherd finds the sheep and he rejoices. And he rejoices. Right? All the effort that's just been expended finding the sheep who is doing nothing but sitting like a dead weight, making no noise. The shepherd has found the sheep and he rejoices. Now let's talk about sheep for just a second because I love to talk about sheep. All right? I'm kidding. I know nothing about sheep. But I do know this. A female ewe lamb weighs anywhere from 90 to 300 pounds. I had no idea. A male sheep, full grown, can weigh anywhere from 150 to 450 pounds. So let's read this again. Jesus finds the sheep, puts the sheep on his shoulders, and he rejoices. Sorry, Jesus, the shepherd does. Y'all, that is insane. That's crazy. Because now that he's found the sheep, he's got it on his shoulders, he's rejoicing. Guess what? He has to walk back with this dead weight on his shoulders. It's going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. After the sheep is found, he has to be restored and brought back to his community and the rest of them. And shockingly, Jesus, as the shepherd, is rejoicing. He is so excited that he has found this one lost sheep. So not only are the Pharisees drawn in as shepherds, and not only are they called stupid for losing the sheep, they now have that hot, nasty, woolen sheep around their neck with all of its grossness and its nastiness dripping down into their robes. This is highly offensive to them. And hilarious to us. Because Jesus says, oh yeah, and when you get there, the shepherd is rejoicing. Aren't you rejoicing, oh Pharisees? Isn't that exciting? That you too would have the opportunity to shepherd God's people here in Israel? And Jesus says that the shepherd is filled with joy, but it doesn't even end there. Because in verse 7 at the end, it says that when he gets back, he's even more overjoyed. That he gets his friends and his family, and he brings the sheep back into a community, and they rejoice together because that one sheep who was lost is now found, and there is much rejoicing. Now look, it is entirely possible for us to see this parable and the climax and the point of this parable as, well, isn't that cool that, you know, that God would leave the 99 and come for the one? Isn't that awesome that God would want to do that? Because that's the obvious implication here, that God is the shepherd who leaves heaven in the person of Jesus and comes and gets the lost sheep. Yes, that is awesome. And that's amazing. And that in and of itself is a deep truth of the gospel. But I actually don't think that's the climax of this parable. That's not, if you're seeing that, you're getting about half of it. Because what I think is actually deeper and more moving than that is that Jesus takes joy in doing that. Let that sink in for just a second. That Jesus, the Prince of Heaven, who was absolutely the king, the high and dignified one, who needed nothing. He left all of his comforts and came and put on flesh, and he walked among us in our brokenness, in our filthiness, in our rebellion, in our apathy. And friends, he didn't just do it because he had to do it. It wasn't just a dutiful response by Jesus to God the Father saying, hey, Jesus, mission, go and save people. Yes, Father, I'll do it. And so he goes down. That's not what happens. Jesus comes and he is overjoyed, Paul says in Philippians, that for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. I wonder when the last time you thought that God is overjoyed, not just at finding you, but upon finding you, taking you in the midst of all of your shame and your crap and all of the messiness of your life and your blown budget and your failed friendships and relationships and your broken and messed up sexuality, all that stuff. If you thought that Jesus looks at you out of duty, you will respond one way. But if you think and believe that Jesus looks at you with joy, then when that hits you in your heart, friends, you will be totally changed. Because one would see Jesus as merely fulfilling a responsibility. The other sees Jesus as the gracious Savior who lays his life down for his sheep. And so Jesus elsewhere says of himself, I am the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. I know my own. In my own know me. There's an intimacy there. I know the Father, and the Father knows me, and I lay down my life for my sheep. Jesus is unapologetic about who he is and what he came to do for us. And not just that he had to, but that he did with joy. I'll close with this story. Last fall, right around this time, I was mesmerized in that uncomfortable, awful sort of way as I listened to news reports and saw it on TV about all of what was happening in West Africa as the Ebola virus was spreading and infecting not just individuals, but whole communities and populations. And I mean, it was awful. If you listened to it at the time, certainly you were similarly affected. It was just terrible, and people were dying in the hundreds at a time. And there was one story one morning as I was dropping my daughter off at school, listening to NPR, and they were doing a report on this doctor in West African country of Sierra Leone. And this doctor's name was Sheikh Umar Khan. And Dr. Khan was the top doctor in Sierra Leone. That wasn't a title he gave himself. He was nationally recognized as the man. And he had, at his own volition, left his normal duties and responsibilities, which I might say were in and of themselves very dangerous. But he left that place in the sanitary conditions of the hospital, and he went out to the front lines in Sierra Leone, and he was treating tens and dozens and hundreds of patients who were infected and who he was hoping would not be infected, right? He was out there in the midst of these families and communities trying to educate them that their normal cultural practices were actually spreading the disease. I don't know if you heard the stories, but what would happen is that people didn't have sanitary ways to handle the dead. And so they would just go, they'd pick them up, and they'd be doing these ritualistic things over them. And that's why the disease spread so quickly. And as the doctor came in, there was a lot of skepticism about him. People were saying, whoa, who are you to come in and tell us about our community, right? He was invading their way of life. And on July 22nd last year, Dr. Khan contracted Ebola. And 7 days later, he died. In news of his death, they spread through the whole country like an earthquake. I mean, with ripple effects that just went to the ends of that country and beyond. Dr. Khan has died. And while there was great despair and mourning at his death, the strangest thing happened. That in the wake of his death, people began to change. They began to realize that, oh, this is serious now. That if the top doctor had to come and enter in, and if he can get infected, then we must take this serious. We have to do something differently. And the reporter concluded the story by saying, in the wake of Dr. Khan's death, that was the day when the country began to look at Ebola differently. Friends, no one made Dr. Khan go into the front lines of Sierra Leone. No one made him leave the hospital. He did it because he loved his people. Friends, Jesus didn't have to, but he did. He did it because he loves not people in general, which he does, but it's different than that. He loves us individually, uniquely, as you are. And when that gets into your heart, that Jesus does that out of joy, then you too will begin to take your sin seriously, and you'll begin to see that, man, I can't believe that God would do that for me. And that must be a big deal. Not just in me, but all the sin in the world, the injustices in this community. the broken friendships that I have and the way that I've treated those people and the way that I see others around me treating those people, that's a big deal, and I can't just ignore it anymore. That's a problem. And so we go from sitting on the sideline and merely being the recipient of Jesus' favor to wanting to take that healing favor and that healing power out into the lives of others, not because we have to, but because Jesus joyfully did it for us, and he is changing our heart and giving us hearts that would joyfully now go and do it for him, for his glory, and for the good of all of those who hear it and accept it. Friends, the gospel, the good news for you this morning is that Jesus looks at you with joy, and he loves you, and he has come to find you. And he has. Do you know him as the good shepherd who lays down his life for you this morning? We pray that you would. Let's pray.